Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of The Period Party. I'm Nicole.
Hi, everybody. I'm Matt. Nicole, what have you been doing? Before, I know you're desperate to keep on talking and introducing us, but what have you been doing?
Oh, my goodness. I've been enjoying my life in San Francisco, away from cold, wintry New York. It's been fabulous.
And what time is it where you are?
It's 4 p.m.
See?
What time is it for you?
Nicole, 10 a.m. It's amazing. Normally we are on this like weird time schedule thing. Scheduling time for New York is not easy.
It's so much better, isn't it? In California? I know.
We're both awake.
We are.
A little bit closer to each other.
I know. It's not the end of the day for me and I'm like ready to pass out. So
love it. Love it. Anyway, who have we got today?
So we are talking to Dana Lavoie about taming perimenopausal PMS. Oh my gosh, so juicy. We're going to cover how Chinese medicine and diet can help you manage your cycle and prepare you for an easier menopause naturally. Dana is an acupuncturist, an herbalist, and founder of Menopause Basics. And she's super passionate, like we are, about teaching other women how to find natural relief from seemingly uncontrollable weight gain, hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, and signs of aging. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is like the most fun podcast, you know, just like it says in the name. And I've really been looking forward to being on it.
Awesome.
We love that. We like to be a little bit silly because obviously we're talking often about serious issues. You know, women's health is tricky, as we all understand. But obviously today we're really keen to dig into understanding women's cycles and how they change. So let's start with that. You know, what happens during perimenopause for women?
Well, the way I see it is this. During your cycle, normally, your hormones are changing throughout your cycle. At one part of your cycle, one hormone goes up, and then it goes down, and another one goes up, and there's like this normal way that the hormones change. And during perimenopause, the same thing happens when you're still having your cycle. The difference is that all the other hormones in your body are changing at the same time. So the way I see it is your body has a built-in system designed to manage those hormonal changes throughout your cycle properly. It's got all these checks and balances and it says, okay, you go up now. Oh, you're high enough. You stop going up and, you know, the next one comes up and you go down. That's all built in. But then during perimenopause, it's sort of like going up three difficulty levels in a video game. You know, your body's trying to do the same thing in an environment that is constantly changing and throwing new challenges, kind of pulling the rug out from under you all the time. And so if your body's own system of managing the cyclical changes and keeping hormones in balance, if that system in your body is working really well, like as well as it was designed to work, then it's going to be able to handle regulating your cycle through perimenopause, even with the added difficulties. But for a lot of women, that hormone regulating system in their body was kind of just keeping its head above water. And when the challenges of perimenopause strike, it can't quite regulate the cycle evenly. It loses ground. And that's the women who are having really more of a hard time during perimenopause.
So before we dig into what those challenges are, can I just ask for our listeners that might not understand what perimenopause or when it begins, what's the average age that women start to approach perimenopause?
You know, the average age is going to be around 38, but I'm always looking for signs of early perimenopause in women in their late 20s and early 30s, just to make sure that, you know, because they can show up that early. Some women will have perimenopausal symptoms for 15 years.
Yikes.
But it's more evident that it'll start like 38 to 45, around there.
Strap in those ovaries, Nicole. We're in trouble.
Oh my gosh. Don't say it. I'm 37. Shucks. Okay. I actually wanted to say, you know, just thinking about menopause in general, I was just having lunch with my boyfriend and his mom and two of her friends. And her friend was saying to me, you know, I got so lucky with this whole menopause thing because I never really really had any symptoms. And I just feel like it's so sad that that's our perception in society now, isn't it? That this has to be a hard, horrible thing to go through. And that if you don't really have any crazy changes, you consider yourself to be super lucky. I wish it was the opposite.
That is exactly what I am trying to tell everyone. Your body was designed to get through this without a lot of difficulty. That's what your body was designed to do. That should be the norm. And in Asian cultures, it is more normal.
Yeah. But we've medicalized it, really, yeah, to a degree, because we've almost turned it into an epidemic or an illness. And, you know, today's Wednesday. On Monday, I had two patients back to back. Both of them had had hysterectomies because their menopausal symptoms were that bad. And I think, you know, this is when I say we've medicalized it. These are the treatments. And I know we're not talking about full-blown menopause, but we're talking about prior to that. But it's, you know, what we're going to dig into, obviously, is what we do when we're transitioning through each and every hormone stage, no matter if it's puberty or perimenopause, really paints the picture moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
What about the changes, Dana? What are the typical changes? Like you said, obviously you can start from late 20s even, but what do you most often see?
You know, the things that I often see first that I'm always a little bit on the lookout for would be like night sweats during PMS.
Ah.
Or night sweats in general, you know, like getting hot at night. That to me is one of the most common signs that things are a bit depleted, things aren't quite where they should be, they're struggling a little bit sooner than they should be. And it makes me want to go in and, you know, correct that before. If you go into perimenopause with that already happening, that's kind of like the opposite of preparing for an easy menopause. You're in a position where you're more likely to have like worse hot flashes and worse night sweats.
Oh, wow.
I'm in trouble.
I'm in so much trouble. Oh, my gosh.
Last night I woke up. Look, it's summer here. So, and we've had, actually, it's not, it's autumn. And it's a hot autumn. So, you know, we're still in, I don't know, I can't convert degrees for you guys, but we're in 30-degree-ish weather.
That's hot. That's 80. Hot, that's right? Like over 80. Yeah, it's like 80 something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not complaining. But the other night I'm thinking, am I hotter or is it hot? I actually think I'm hotter. I don't know the last time I wanted the covers fully over me. I kind of wrap them around me in a weird way where my like butt's covered but my legs are out, and I think I'm hot actually. And I'm 38, so, you know, there might be some...
Yep, and heat that's worse at night, or that you feel in your feet, in your hands, or your head, you know, that heat tends to be a little bit more indicative. But it could be the hot weather. You know, you'll know if it's a pattern because it'll continue through the colder months.
Right. Yes, well, that's true too. And you know what it's like? I have no excuse. I have all of the resources. I know exactly what's going on here. I just need to do something about it. So are there other changes that are outside of sweating that are, or being hot? That are commonly seen?
Well, there could be, like, your cycle could become irregular. Like, if it's always been 28 days and it starts to get a bit shorter, like now it's 25 or 23, that can be a sign as well. And, you know, when you're more in perimenopause, the other thing that I look out for would be like the shorter cycle, or sometimes you'll get heavier bleeding or bleeding that lasts for longer as well. Sometimes when progesterone starts to drop, which is often what happens first, you can get into a situation where you have a lot of bleeding or even spotting during the second half of your cycle, like after ovulation and before you really begin bleeding. But the shortening cycle is probably one of the more common ones.
Yeah. So okay. Do you think that it's changed? Do you think it's harder for women now than it used to be?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends when used to be is. I think that there's been times when, you know, a lot of what I do with women is work to get that hormone regulating system in their body working better so that it can handle the changes that are happening. And that involves managing stress. It involves eating regular meals, you know, eating a varied healthy diet, you know, practicing some kind of relaxation, getting enough sleep, not completely burning the candle at both ends. There's a lot of different things. And, you know, I like to think that there were times in the past, or maybe even in some other countries that I consider a little more mature than ours, where not everybody is working so incredibly much and so stressed out all the time. And I would think that would have helped.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm sort of leaning towards, is that I feel like, you know, women seem to transition better even 40 or 50 years ago. I don't know, I wasn't living at the time. But life was very different. Most women weren't working mothers. They probably had maybe more children than they have now. It's just, life was different and stress was different, I guess. And it was still there, but it was in a different format, I guess. Whereas, you know, most women now, they're having their children later. They're often working mothers. The stress of that, I think, is rather epic. And even if that's not the case, I still think we're working harder than ever before, and that takes its toll on our body.
Yeah. I also think that it's just, there used to be more time set aside for the community gatherings and the kinds of things that people do other than work. And that some of those have fallen by the wayside these days.
I think that's a really valid point. I absolutely agree with that. And there's a lot of research into that too, isn't there? You know, the social aspects of well-being and how that really is a big factor.
Mm-hmm. That, I was going to also say too, I was thinking about environmental toxins, so xenoestrogens and how that plays a role. I mean, obviously it plays a major role in women who are still cycling and who aren't in perimenopause. So I imagine it plays a role once we get into the next stage.
Yeah, it's huge, you know, because sometimes I meet women, they're like, I'm eating right, I'm exercising, I'm meditating, and my hormones are still, I just can't get them under control, and they just haven't addressed that. It's like I say, if you're doing everything right, maybe you haven't looked at getting the worst hormone-disrupting chemicals out of your life, because they are so disruptive. Yes, definitely. I don't think, there might not have been quite as many of those around way back when.
Not even
that's
close.
That's actually very, it's so interesting. I had a patient the other day and that was exactly it. She was doing everything right. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what is this? And then I looked at her diet and she was eating 2 canned tins of tuna every day. And I said, oh my goodness, that tin of tuna is lined with plastic. You must stop. Like, that is causing, I believe, a lot of your symptoms. And she was like, well, I've only started doing that for as long as I've had these symptoms.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I know, but like, this is the thing. We look for really complicated explanations, and very often they're not complicated. They're actually very simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those hormone disruptors, they seem to affect some women more than others, but I believe it's worth getting them out of the picture, because a lot of the trouble I think that women have specifically during perimenopause too is progesterone levels start to drop. And so you have a bigger gap, like your estrogen is higher and your progesterone is lower, and that ratio gets off. And so avoiding those xenoestrogens, those artificial estrogens, is especially going to help. And also making sure that the ways that your body detoxes extra estrogen, like gets rid of extra estrogen, that's hard to say, but making sure that those pathways, every time I say it, I'm like, oh, that was hard to say. Making sure that those pathways are turned on and working well also helps to keep that ratio in balance. So like eating foods that increase progesterone and making sure that you're doing things that allow your body to get rid of estrogen that it doesn't need brings that ratio closer together, and they both help quite a bit during perimenopause.
No doubt. So obviously that leads us into diet and how that can help us. So I know that's one of your 3 key things to adjust to sort of help our bodies manage these changes that are inevitable. So I'm curious about, you mentioned foods to build progesterone. I think that is probably my number one question in life. So if you want to elaborate on that, I think it would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in terms of building progesterone, there's a few ways to look at it. And because I'm a tonic herbalist, I always look at things from this perspective. If something is low in your body, some energy or substance is deficient in your body and you want to build it up, you want to look at 2 things. You want to look at, okay, what can I take that will refill. Like if it's a, you've got a bucket of progesterone, like what can I do that will refill that bucket and really top off the levels? And the other thing you want to look at is there a big giant hole in the bottom of that bucket where I am leaking progesterone and losing progesterone? Because if you are, you know, you can put stuff in the bucket all day long, but it's going to be very hard to actually fill the bucket. Whereas if you can plug those leaks and then eat the right foods to build progesterone, you're going to get, you know, your results are going to be so much better. And that's why I like to combine diet and lifestyle. So
do you not find the opposite, just to throw a curveball? Find that progesterone is often low in the presence of high estrogen, and bringing down estrogen will naturally allow progesterone to rise. Do you find that as well?
I find that, yeah, that estrogen tends to get too high, progesterone gets to get too low. And when that ratio gets really far off, it's harder for the body to do anything right.
Yeah, absolutely.
As they start to get closer together, things start to kind of like hum along a little bit better.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I just find that it's, you know, it's very, I often have a little bit of, not a giggle, that's a bit rude, but often patients come in and say, oh, I've got low progesterone, so, you know, I'm on progesterone patches or whatever. And I'm like, well, it's not going to change, it's not going to fix itself until you get your estrogen down.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason why it's low, you know. And like you said, the idea of a bucket, I always say to patients, you know, think about a glass that has to be full. And it's just the ratio that changes. It's not that often. It happens very rarely. You see someone with low estrogen. It's usually now modern living sees, like you said, because of xenoestrogens, that we've got too much of that. But what I also find is that when we've got too much of something, it's much easier to balance that out than it is to nourish and build something. It takes more time to build something, and we can get a quicker result when we have to sort of bring things down. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I tell clients that all the time when I'm talking to them, like, oh, we need to build something up. And I say, and it, you know, if I just needed to clear a bunch of heat, we could do that pretty quickly. But building things up just takes a certain amount of time. Yeah, there's not a lot of shortcuts with that other than plugging the holes. So I find that, and that's why, you know, avoiding the artificial estrogens like the BPAs and plastics, that's going to help bring the estrogen down. Another thing that's going to help is managing stress, because stress can rob your body of progesterone. So avoiding the hormone disrupting chemicals and plastics, managing stress levels, drinking enough water and eating enough fruits and vegetables with fiber to make sure that your detox pathways are working. Those that combination of things is going to set the stage. That's going to kind of plug some of those leaks so that when you go to refill progesterone, it works better. And foods that are good for progesterone, there are certainly herbs as well. But vitamin C is good. And a lot of these things you're going to find like come up, like, you know, fruits and vegetables, healthy fats are really good. So vitamin C, you're going to find it in like sweet potato, kiwi, strawberry, orange, papaya, pumpkin, lemon, broccoli, mustard greens, Brussels sprouts. You could even use something like a camu powder. Zinc is a great one. That's a little bit harder to find. It's in red meat, a pumpkin, cashews, some oysters, shrimp, lamb, liver, shellfish. Magnesium is really great for progesterone. And this is something that a lot of women I find are deficient in. A lot of people in the modern world are deficient in magnesium, to the point where even supplementing with magnesium or getting magnesium topically by soaking in, you know, Epsom salts or using a topical magnesium can be really worthwhile. But you will find some in cashews and leafy greens. Oh, and chocolate, right? Which I love.
So can I ask a question about magnesium and what you find clinically? I don't find topical magnesium cuts the mustard. I just don't find it's enough.
I find that it is helpful, like, you know, maybe soaking in it before bed or if you're having a lot of muscle cramps. I wouldn't say that it's going to really be enough supplementation. Like, it's not the equivalent of taking a full dose of oral magnesium.
Especially if you're deficient. I would say I use a combination. I do Epsom salt baths and like a magnesium spray, as well as like a supplement in many cases. And that seems to really help, especially very deficient people. Yes. The symptoms are so obvious too. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah, and common.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, like you said, I'm yet to find somebody who's not deficient in magnesium in some way because
because
of stress and how, you know, I went to a event recently where they were talking about the latest research in magnesium, and I was blown away. And what they were suggesting was that supplementation wise, we can actually supplement according to the needs of the patient. So under high stress, they would be taking far more than somebody that's not. And I've tried this on with so many patients and it works beautifully that I might get them to supplement, you know, 1,000 milligrams up to 4 times a day, which is a huge amount. But what it does is it addresses their stress in that moment, and they don't have to stay on that large amount. They can come and bring that back down to maybe, you know, twice a day supplementing. But it is a game changer. And I find for a lot of people that, you know, alone can have such a profound effect on their hormones and just how they're feeling and their own well-being.
I love that idea. Yeah, I agree. Magnesium is so important for practically all cellular functions. And I think that sounds amazing. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Now, I'm curious about that. Like, how does that cause stomach issues or stomach upset? Because I know that's like the one symptom with magnesium that people struggle with high dose.
So or diarrhea.
I have found that we use a slow release magnesium and that stomach issues aren't a problem.
Oh, that's amazing.
And someone will know if they've, you know, really, that's the only, they'll know pretty quickly whether it's not working for them. Every now and again, you'll supplement to a patient and they'll say, I've got, you know, loose bowels. And I'll say, all right, we'll back off. It's either too much or too fast.
Right.
I, with the slow release, I have never had anybody complain of tummy issues, and I have been doing this probably for about 6 months now. And it's very effective, very effective. And I mean, so this is actually how long I've been doing it for. Last year, if you remember, Nicole, before I came to Mindshare, I was a right mess. Before I went over, before I met Nicole in San Diego, I was a hot mess. I was so stressed. I was so wound up. I didn't eat for a week. Like, it was silly in hindsight. I know that. But I was really, really got myself in a state, and I started supplementing 4 times a day, and it made the world of difference. Like, I honestly can say, and that was obviously extreme stress that I put my mind and self under. But, you know, like you said, I think magnesium is used for so many energy processes, and we just don't get enough anymore from our food. And that's what the latest research suggests. So this is why, if we are deficient, we do have to supplement, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very depleted in the soil in a lot of places. So it's just not in the foods that are even supposed to have it.
This is it. Exactly. So moving from, I mean, we're obviously talking about supplements, but I would love for you to talk about adaptogenic herbs, because that's another question I get a lot of. I would love to hear what some key adaptogens are that can really help women when they're in this transitional period.
Sure. I find that there's a couple of things that I look at during perimenopause. One is, are the woman's energies full? Are they replenished? You know, is their fire energy in a good place? Is their water energy nice and full? If the water energy is getting low, then they're going to be having, like I was talking about, those night sweats during PMS. They're going to be having more like heat symptoms, dry symptoms, those types of things. And if their fire energy is really low, they could be feeling freezing cold all the time. They could have a low sex drive. They could have low energy. And so I want them to feel energetic and replenished and not too hot and not too cold. So if any of their energies seem, you know, also blood deficiency is big. Like if they're anemic or super pale, or I feel that they might be blood deficient, I want to build that back up too. So I want to build everything up before they start menopause. And there are adaptogens that are really great for building up the water energy, and other adaptogens that are really great more for building up the fiery energy. So sometimes I'll customize it somewhat depending. There's one called He Shouwu, which is an herb that is really, really good for building up the water energy and the blood. And that's probably the most common issue from a Chinese medicine perspective that women have in perimenopause and menopause is not enough water energy. And that's why they get hot flashes, you know, and night sweats and dryness. So that is a really adaptogenic herb that is really a good one for during perimenopause would be one of my favorites. And then
I just wanted to ask, is this something that a woman would have to get through an acupuncturist or an herbalist?
You know, not necessarily.
Okay.
It's not a medicinal herb. And like, I find the thing with herbs is what makes all the difference is getting really high quality herbs. Right. You know, if you're not taking high quality herbs, they could do as much harm as good, or they're not going to help that much. Like, it's all about the quality of the source material and the processing. So whether you're working through an herbalist or just an herb store or wherever, it's all about getting it from a supplier that you trust and that you know it considers quality like the most important thing. And I actually use a lot of herbs from a company called Dragon Herbs that has all their herbs for sale to the public on their website. Like, you don't need to go through an acupuncturist. And I just find that they're the highest quality herbs I have ever seen anywhere.
That's awesome.
You can also get them on iHerb.
Yeah,
for those of you who are in Australia.
Yeah, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're available, you know, it's just about being careful of your source, I guess.
Okay. So that was that first one. Are there a couple others that you recommend as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There is an herb that I really love. It's called reishi mushroom. You've probably heard of it. And that is one that is good for a lot of different things. It's especially good for kind of keeping your peace of mind and, you know, keeping like spiritual growth going, which is can get a little bit lost in the shuffle during that perimenopausal PMS, which can be kind of intense. It's a huge adaptogen, and it happens to be extremely good for the liver. And the liver, it has a lot to do with managing estrogen levels in the body and detoxification. So you cannot go wrong with reishi mushroom or with He Shouwu. And another, so those are some herbs that are like, He Shouwu is so good for refilling the energy bucket, plus it's adaptogenic. What the adaptogens do is that regulating system that's in your own body that's supposed to manage hormone levels while they're changing, well, adaptogens help your body adjust to changes. You know, they help your body regulate things better. And so that's why I find adaptogens are so wonderful. They strengthen the regulating system, the system that regulates the hormones. So if you make sure the energy buckets are full, then using some adaptogens to make sure that that regulating system is tuned up. That's why I love the adaptogens. So He Shouwu and reishi mushroom. And another great adaptogen is ginseng. And I often will use American ginseng for women during perimenopause or getting close to menopause because it's more cooling and moistening than the other ginsengs. But it's definitely one of the most powerful adaptogens out there.
Wow.
Love it. I love that they're practical, that people can, access them. We are running out of time, unfortunately, but before we go, I know, Dana, we could listen to you all day. Do you want to tell our listeners where they could find you so that they can tap into more of your goodness?
Absolutely. I have a website. It's danalavoislac.com. And I know the link is going to be in the show notes. And I love to connect with people online. So that is just a great place to learn more about what I do and connect with me there or in my Menopause Basics Facebook group.
Awesome. And also, I think you're running a promotion for all of our listeners. Maybe you want to explain to them exactly what that's about before we head off.
Yes, I have a PDF download. It's completely free. And it's the link to it is in the notes below this video. And it's not actually available on my website. So it's just for you guys.
And ooh, aren't we lucky?
It's the 4 steps to hormonal balance. And so it's looking at, like, you know, like diet and lifestyle and herbs, because I find that, you know, if you just do one thing, it's like, why am I not getting results? Where if you do, you look at all these different areas that, you know, Chinese medicine is holistic medicine. And to me, that's part that sometimes gets lost in translation. It's not just that acupuncture is holistic. It's that women in China who are doing acupuncture are also eating the right foods and, you know, doing more Qigong, you know, they're doing diet, lifestyle, and herbs. So that's kind of what I cover in the handout, is starting to address hormonal balance from all these different places.
Amazing. I know everyone's going to want to go and check that out. So we'll put those details in the show notes below as well. Thank you, Dana, so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure to chat. You're a woman after my own heart, obviously, as a herbalist and acupuncturist.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. For all of our other listeners, if you are wanting more, of course, please go back and check out the previous period party episodes. And you are definitely going to need to rate those for us, because we will love you so much more if you can come and do that. Just give us five stars. That's all we ask for, isn't it?
That's it. We're low maintenance.
We're very low maintenance. But thank you again, Dana, so much. And Nicole, I will speak to you next time.
Thank you, ladies.
Thanks again. It's been a blast.